Welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Have you ever wondered about things like Bitcoin, investing in the share market, or buying investment properties? Often the hardest thing about creating wealth is simply making a start. Making a start begins with learning. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is all about helping the everyday Kiwi create wealth through investing. None of this should be considered financial advice, but I do hope it gets you thinking. Let's get started. Hey, welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor. I'm Darcy Ungaro, and I would like to firstly thank you for joining me on this podcast adventure where we explore very broadly what does wealth mean and how can we get more of it. And so today, on that theme of being quite broad with what we cover on this show, I'm catching up again with Simon Paris. Now, Simon joined me in July of 2019, and we discussed non-bank lending and kind of a bit of a myth-busting episode where we dispelled some of the preconceived notions about non-banks and how they work. Basically, if you want to be building wealth, especially through property, often you need to rope in some partners. Hopefully, it'll be a Main Street bank that you know and that you trust and that you're comfortable with. And that's all great. And especially if you're a residential property investor, I can almost guarantee that's where you're going to sit. Now, as soon as you get into commercial property investment or any sort of development flavored type of project, you need to be very, very comfortable with the concept of using a non-bank. It just means that they're not going to be regulated in the same way as these commercial banks that you know and you trust. It'll be more expensive. They may have slightly different rules. They may only want to know you for a short period of time. They work completely differently. But again, if you want to grow wealth in the new world, you need to be open to new ways of doing it. And that's why I got Simon in again today, because we recently we covered commercial property investment, the benefits of it. And it is an amazing area to get involved in if you can. And there are many ways that you can do that. And we're going to lightly touch on that again today. But we're going to drill down a little bit more on how some of the banks view commercial property investment. And if you want to get into it, you need to be open to the fact that this is one of those areas where if you don't fit the box of your mainstream known and trusted bank, you need to be comfortable with the idea, at least, of talking to a non-bank lender where, yep, it will be more expensive and it will probably just be one of the steps that you'll take to get onto the commercial property ladder. So hope you enjoy this. I know you will enjoy it. I always enjoy catching up with Simon. He's a really good guy. He explains things really clearly. Let's get started. Hey, welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor. I'm Darcy Ungaro, and I'm sitting in the studio with Simon Paris.
It's great to be back again, Darcy.
It's great to have you back, and thanks for answering the call and putting yourself through the punishment of sitting down again with me. That's good.
My pleasure.
Yeah, that's
great.
Good.
I really enjoy it.
Good. And we caught up in July last year.
That's right.
And we talked specifically then about some of the non-truths around non-banks. I guess you could call it a bit of a myth-busting session.
Yeah.
And so if anyone's interested in that, check out that episode from mid-July last year. And but today, we're going to take a bit more of a deep delve into commercial property investment. We had a couple of guys from Newland Burling on the show a few weeks ago, Jack Revel and Brandon Wilcox, and we covered it from their perspective, working in the commercial property investment space, helping people get into the market there. And that was really cool, you know, just to get stuck into that to see what the environment looks like. But I want to talk to you because with your background, you work really closely to the business end of that transaction in the lending space.
Yes.
So for our listeners, tell us a little bit about what you do and what makes you passionate about property.
Yes. So I'm a general manager of Merchant Banking Group, which is a facilitator of non-bank finance. Non-bank finance being arranging finance for those that haven't been able to do it through the normal banking channels.
Yeah.
There could be a number of reasons for that, whether it be servicing issues or equity, etc. The industry has been growing rapidly year on year as the banks start to tighten their policies and their regulations, etc. So it's a golden age for us. And the thing that I'm passionate about is that we are assisting people to get to their wealth goals while taking a pragmatic and weighing up all the risks at the same time. so that we can make informed decisions.
Not everybody is going to fit inside a box, right?
That's right.
And we live in a free market where there are people that will respond to the needs, take the initiative, put their necks out, and actually start businesses and actually help people to fund things that don't fit inside that plain vanilla box.
That's right.
Cool. What's been happening in the last little while in this sector of commercial property, and what are the things that we can kind of just be aware of, or what light can you shine on some of the macro considerations?
Sure.
Specifically cycles and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, the commercial property sector has enjoyed a very good growth cycle over the last 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
There's a number of factors that come into that. Historically low interest rates,
yeah.
Very good employment rates. There's also a outstrip of demand compared to supply for commercial properties as well.
Okay.
Not to mention that there's a healthy business environment as well.
Yeah.
So all those factors have sort of made the sector quite attractive.
Yeah.
But as we all know, those cycles come and go, and there are some grey clouds on the horizon, and that comes down to the economic uncertainty with the elections, etc., not to mention regulatory changes, as well as the tightening of bank criteria.
That's kind of actually, that's a great thing for you guys, but
yeah.
for everyday people, that means that it's harder to obtain traditional mainstream bank funding to do it, right?
That's right.
If you were kind of from an everyday person's perspective, thinking about commercial property as from the outside,
yes,
trying to get in some way, what would be the first place that you would go to kind of start to upskill yourself and just to become a little bit more aware of how commercial property works? Like,
sure.
What kind of resources, I guess, is what I'm getting at, would you suggest people look at?
The first thing I would be doing is researching market commentary on commercial property, and there's lots of it out there.
Right.
Then you need to start doing some due diligence on what do you need to look for or be aware of,
yeah,
when investing in commercial compared to perhaps residential.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are vastly different.
It's such an interesting space to watch from, I guess, your perspective and mine as well. When you see people going through this, they often,
yes,
have a certain lens or a paradigm that they're leaning on to engage with a sector that they're unfamiliar with. They kind of cling to what they know. In this case,
yes,
residential property investors, where it happens quick. Access to money is fast.
Yes.
It's cheap.
Yes.
A lot of people are doing it. Yeah, in the retail sense, a lot of people are doing it. But when you flick over to commercial, yeah, things take longer.
Yes.
It's more expensive. A lot more due diligence is required.
Yes.
There's a lot more considerations. And so it's really important, I think, anyway, to actually start off slow, investigate, do a lot of research so that you understand the environment before you start.
Absolutely.
With it, right? Yeah.
And you know, with the cycle that we've been experiencing so far, people will often get enticed by the returns available through commercial compared to, say, residential. And them chasing that higher return for their money can sometimes give them tunnel vision,
yeah,
looking at the end result but not actually doing the due diligence at the start.
Sure.
And that can lead to problems.
Gotcha. Focusing on the finish line too much rather,
yeah,
than the starting line.
That's right.
Cool. So broadly speaking, let's cover this off for our audience in terms of the landscape and the different methods that you can engage with commercial property.
Yes.
Take me through that. What are some of the ways that we can get into commercial property?
Well, there are a number of ways. You know, there are syndicated funds for commercial property. There are also listed and unlisted funds.
Yeah.
Not to mention going on it alone.
We've covered the syndicates, the listed, the unlisted, and that leaves one other main category or one other main way that you can partake of commercial property, direct ownership. So do you want to talk to me about that? That's where basically it's just you and that chunk of dirt, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
There is... like I earlier mentioned, there is definitely some reasons to get into commercial property. The yields are average are higher than, say, residential.
Yeah.
There's a lot more due diligence to go through with a commercial property purchase.
Yeah,
there's the tenancies that you need to look through. So you obviously would want, well, depending on what your strategy is, you would want potentially to have that building already tenanted.
Yeah.
And you want to understand what those lease agreements are. So you may need to get a solicitor or a lawyer involved to go through those lease agreements so that you can understand what your obligations are, what their obligations are, and also the time of their lease.
Yes.
If you've got only one tenant and they've only got a year to go, you need to think about, well, if they leave, what am I going to do? Because the moment they leave, you stop getting income. And realistically, you might be waiting some time. Mm. That sort of feeds into my next point is, what is the, is your commercial space general or is it specific?
Mm. Is now, it a movie theater or is it just a big shell, right?
That's right. Yeah. So if you, let's use a mechanics. If that mechanic leaves, you're going to have to find another mechanic. Mm. Now, who knows what the mechanic, you know, the demand is. Mm. Alternatively, you could repurpose that site to something that you want. Mm. Now, there's a whole different range of factors you've got to bring in there. How much is it going to cost to refit it? What is there any other factors that you need to be aware of, like getting rid of the specialized equipment or
soil contamination.
Yeah. That, yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. And that is a point that some people don't even realize is a key factor. And those costs can be significant.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be removing 2 meters of soil. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's, we're probably painting a bit of a heavy picture here, but I think we can't really sugarcoat something like this. Like,
absolutely not.
Investing in commercial property does, you know, by all accounts, every time I look at this, I just think, well, yeah, I get the fact that the returns are awesome. You're buying cash flow. There's way more ways that you can increase the value of that property by augmenting the lease in some manner.
Yes.
So I get that. That's awesome. But there's so many fish hooks. There's so many different layers. And again, if you went in there with a very, I guess, naive layer of understanding, which is totally appropriate in some sectors, especially residential property investment.
Sure.
You can almost get away with that, no problem. But with commercial, it's you're playing a different game and you need to understand the environment that you're playing in, right?
That's right.
Because, there's returns there, but there's also risks that they're unknown unknowns, right?
They're unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
Then there's also the financing. We know that residential, you can go up to 90-95%. That's not the same for commercial.
Right.
Typically, and I say typically,
yeah,
you will, a bank or a non-bank funder will go up to 65% or thereabouts of the value of the property.
Sure. Okay.
So that means you need 35% to chip in towards it. That's a high barrier to entry for many people.
Correct. And just to clarify, Simon, that makes no difference whether it's your business that's occupying that dwelling or not. Like, that's just purely 65%.
That's purely based on the security being taken, which is commercial.
Gotcha, 65%, yeah.
And you can see by all the risks that we've talked about, hence why the level is significantly lower than what you can do through residential.
Perfect. Yeah. And so it's a great indicator of risk when you understand what the lending rules are.
That's right.
That somebody's whose money that you want to access, they're assessing the risk and they've said that the lending ratio has got to be like that because they want to make sure that you have so much skin in the game that you're not going to walk away from it or
correct,
that there's a decent buffer.
So banks, when it comes to financing commercial property, they will look at a number of aspects of the transaction, which includes the lending value ratio, the tenancies in place, as well as the earthquake and seismic rating.
Yeah.
Unlike residential property where they can do 30 years, with commercial, it's generally restricted to 15 years maximum,
right?
Typically principal and interest over that term.
Yeah,
wow. But it can be in different structures and different forms,
yes,
depending on each individual transaction that
so
they see.
It's very much case by case.
There's it's very
no
much.
Hard and fast rule. But the main thing is that the payments could be significantly higher than what you're used to in the old residential investment property land.
Correct.
So be aware of that.
Be aware of that.
That changes the dynamics of everything, right? But I guess that's probably one of the reasons why maybe you can only borrow generally up to 65% because you need to have some cash flow coming off that lease to help you reduce the loan term, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and then ideally, though, when you're going into this, you need to be, you know, developing some sort of strategy to increase the revenue you're going to get from that lease, which therefore increases the value of the property, lowers your lending ratio, makes it more attractive. So when you go to renegotiate with the bank, maybe they relook at it, right?
Yes. Who knows? And it's always beneficial to talk to the bank about what requirements or what their lending is going to look like for a commercial asset.
Yes.
And that could be invaluable for you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just having those conversations totally. At an early stage can save you a bit of time.
Yeah. And I guess to counter that out, though, as well, is that it's going to be case by case specific on the property that you're looking for as well.
Correct.
So it's good to know what the general rules are. And I
yes.
guess we've kind of just covered that. But when you're looking at something which is not a prime location, not a prime sort of property, it's a little bit around the edges, they might look at it a little bit differently than how you're looking at it. You've got to remember you're playing their game. If you want their money, you've got to play by their rules.
That's right.
It doesn't matter whether it's fair. It's just what they say.
Well, that's right. We use the term in the office, those with the gold make the rules.
Sweet. That's a perfect way of putting it. But when again, I'm just coming purely from someone who's listening, who's thinking about this from a residential perspective again. So I'm buying an investment property. I might be borrowing 70%. Let's say it's a $700,000 loan on $1 million purchase price on my investment property.
Mm-hmm.
I've got interest only.
Mm-hmm.
Bank's appetite for interest only on investment properties we'll assume is constant, and it's all good. With commercial, 65%.
Takes on to another point. The maximum loan term you can usually get from a bank is 15 years for commercial.
Right. Is that right?
Yeah.
So everything going well, yeah. You're going to have this loan for maybe 15 years, and really that's it?
Yeah.
Wow. So really, really conservative, aren't they?
They are.
Is it being conservative, or is it just being appropriate for the level of risk that exists with commercial property?
Yeah, it's a blend of the both.
Right.
It is appropriate for that for the risk profile of commercial. Also, there is that conservativeness
sure.
that we have been experiencing with banks for the last few years.
Yeah, in the last few years. So what you're alluding to there is that the bank's general appetite for taking on board risk has been dropping.
Mm.
And as a result, non-bank lenders have been picking up the slack.
Mm.
So when, again, coming from a property investor's perspective, I want to get into commercial for the first time, I might be quite surprised, I guess, at how conservative the bank is acting around this. But that's not to say that if the bank says no, that it's a bad idea. A lot of people might infer that, well, if the banks aren't interested in doing it, it actually must be a bad idea. But that's not necessarily the case, because they'll be there, you know, throwing fuel on the fire when it's warm and taking away the umbrellas when it's raining sometimes, because that's just, you know, they'll amplify what's already going on. It doesn't necessarily act as an indicator of what's a good idea or not.
That's right.
So there's this non-bank piece. So why is it growing and where is it going with the non-bank sector?
Okay. The non-bank sector has been growing, I believe it's about 16% growth since last year.
Wow.
And the year, and I think when I talked to you in July, it was 15% from the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's got a real common trend going on there. And the growth is in part due to the banks' requirements for increased capital reserves.
Yes.
Which means that they are now really needing to cherry pick
the very best.
The very best.
Yeah,
and safest. And very best may actually correlate to, you know, mum and dad borrowers, residential property, easy to move,
yes.
good location, etc.
Yes.
And shying away from commercial development, farmland. Why go there when you can just take your mum and dad?
Yeah,
standard
just
residential.
Just take the best of the best, right?
Take the best of the best.
And that, so you touched on that term, capital reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Just really briefly, because I just can't remember whether or not we've covered that on the show to a great extent. But now that that's kind of known.
Yes.
Would you want to just speak to that a little bit and explain what that means?
The Reserve Bank feels the need to insulate our economy from, you know, another global financial crisis, etc., where we saw a lot of international banks being hard hit, where they go, right, well, to insulate us, we want the banks to hold more money,
yeah.
cash in the bank.
Yeah. I guess as an analogy, it would be kind of like, as a household, you know that there might be a redundancy coming up. Well, you're worried about that, so you're building up your cash reserves to ride out those rainy days, I guess. Is that kind of be like an appropriate analogy?
Yeah.
And so as a result, you're only going to be taking advantage of what the safe opportunities are, the safe profitable opportunities, because you don't want to be putting your capital on the line for something with a high degree of loss, right?
Correct.
Cool. Okay.
So that has given them more of a conservative nature to almost war chest those funds and take on less high risk opportunities.
Cool. So from a commercial property investor's perspective, now the game changes a little bit, because it's like, well, if you want to have a seat at the table, it just got a little bit more expensive.
Potentially.
Yeah. And if there is a benefit to what you're trying to do, you need to kind of be willing to share a little bit more of that benefit with another lender, and you might need to get away from this notion that if the bank says no, that you don't do it.
Mm.
Is that, would that be fair?
That would be fair. I mean, again, the interest rates for commercial lending through banks is higher, a reflection of its risk. I think it's about, you know, if you're looking at a residential, you're looking at, what, 3 to 4%. Commercial, you might be looking 5 to 6%, or maybe even more.
Yes. And that's just with the banks.
Yeah. The non-bank approach to funding, like I've said in previous podcasts, we're a bit more pragmatic. Mm. We look at the transaction in its entirety with a viewpoint of where is the client wanting to go with this and what time frame, and where is our source of repayment coming from? And typically where I play is in that short-term 1 to 2 year space.
Okay.
So we're not your long-term 30 years, et cetera. We might be getting you into a position where you want to buy a commercial property. You've got some good equity in there.
Yeah.
You may want to kick out the tenants, bring in new tenants, get a longer lease term, and then move it to a bank.
I see.
You may want to be, we haven't touched on it, but the earthquake.
If you did see a commercial property opportunity, 1 year lease, you knew that it had maybe a very, very subpar earthquake rating, and you knew what it would take to get that right and to get a new tenant in, maybe a mainstream bank isn't going to want to know you to get in, but maybe you do go in and you do some work to increase the rating, get a new tenant in. That's kind of what space
Absolutely.
You would play in, right?
Perfect example.
Right.
I call it the NBS score, which is basically the seismic rating of a building.
Right.
In an earthquake.
That's the new build standard.
It's the new build standard. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got a NBS of, say, 34 to 60%, that is deemed as an earthquake risk.
Sure.
Once you go from 66 to 100, that is the safe spectrum where the banks are,
in more than comfortable.
All funders are typically happy to take that property on.
Sure.
But if it's under 67%, raises a whole lot of new considerations.
And maybe the cost goes up. Maybe the LVR, the loan to valuation ratio, goes down.
Correct.
Loan term, all that sort of stuff.
That's right. So, you know, what is it going to take or cost to get that rating to an acceptable rating? And do you have the money to do that?
Yes.
That can be a bit of a fish hook for the inexperienced purchaser.
Yes.
Non-banks are very much, in my experience, follow the main high street banks' tendency towards wanting a 66, 67 plus NBS score.
Okay.
That being said, if it's, say, 50% and it's not going to cost a lot to actually get up to that standard.
I see.
And that is being funded by ourselves as part of the...
Right, the acquisition
cost. The acquisition cost.
Yeah.
Then that opens up the scope to a lot more flexibility to get the end result that you're after.
I see. So maybe, I don't know, I guess this is kind of like a bit of a strategy, I guess, for someone who has the... you know, the situational awareness in this sector, if they wanted to get into commercial property investment, or that's the space that they already play in, they find a property, it's sub par, according to the bank's criteria, not by a huge amount, but by just enough for them to say no. They can fund the purchase price, fund the improvements, do those things over a 1 to 2 year period. And then at the end of that, with the help of a non-bank partner, they could then place that business with a mainstream bank at the end. So it's kind of like a, for that period of time where it's not bankable, that's where it sits with a non-bank. But the whole idea is that this is a short-term holding space that you're in, a placeholder, and then later on it gets taken out with the prime mainstream bank.
Correct. Got so we're almost an incubator for getting the right product for what you want out the back.
That's right.
If that's sort of
that's a really good way of putting it. So it's taking that minimum viable product and making it more mainstream viable product for the banks. And I guess as the banks restrict their lending criteria even further, the gap between or the crumbs that are left on the floor
get bigger.
But again, that's probably why the sector is growing so fast. It's a direct reflection of them tightening up.
Absolutely. Right? And, you know, we're seeing a lot of new players entering the market to take a share of what's going on.
Okay. Talk to me about that, Simon.
Yeah.
So, broadly speaking, we won't mention any names, but so in the last, 2 years in particular, you're seeing a few more players enter in this space?
Absolutely. Even in the last 12 months.
Is that right? And what sectors of non-bank lending are they hitting?
They're hitting primarily the what I call near prime,
right,
which is the funders that act much like a bank in their structure of their loans, fixed interest rates, long terms, etc., with loans with a basis point interest cost of maybe 50 to 1% higher than what a bank is.
Sure.
But they're taking, which I call near prime, those really good proposals that maybe just didn't tick one box
right.
in the bank's criteria.
Right.
The other industry is business lending market.
Cash flow lending.
Sure. I mean, you've probably seen the advertisements on radio, on TV, in the newspaper.
Yeah.
That market is seeing some massive growth.
Right.
And players seeking to come in and take a share of that market.
Yeah. Is that likely to continue to grow? Because I guess, again, the banks are leaving bigger crumbs on the floor, and that's one of them.
Yes.
And obviously those players are moving in there because there is a lot of profit to be made. It's not a charitable activity that they're doing. Do you see that overall as good for the sector? Do you see it as just a natural evolution where there are, the first players will generally do quite well, but that's probably because of their margins. And then later on, it'll probably shrink and kind of clean out or stabilize or normalize in some way.
I think there is a need for these alternative lenders in the market.
Yeah.
And look, all businesses at one point or another have cash flow constraints, or cash flow issues, or they want to expand. And sometimes the bank doesn't understand the vision, doesn't like the forecasts, whereas an alternative provider can look past the numbers and perhaps look more on the person or look at what the previous performance, where it's going, and make a decision based on that.
Yeah.
Of course, with higher risk comes higher interest rate, etc.
Yeah.
But for the right people, it works.
Yeah. The rules that govern how mainstream banks work are very different. The Reserve Bank sets some rules designed to protect retail people. But as soon as we get into non-bank, some of those rules don't apply. And so you need to kind of go in there with your eyes wide open, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Just be aware, this is a commercial arrangement. Maybe a higher level of due diligence is required before you make that decision. It's not bad, but it's just more manual thinking about what that is rather than just assuming that it's safe, right?
Yes. There is more to look at when you start stepping away from the main banks.
Yeah.
But with the option of having to go outside the main bank and paying more, you get more freedom.
Correct.
Yeah. Which you don't get, or potentially don't get, when you're with the bank.
Correct.
And what is the opportunity for you if you decide to go outside the main banks and get some financing that way?
Correct, yeah.
where do you see your business or your wealth, et cetera, in the future? And is the cost of that capital worth it for you in the long run?
What's the opportunity cost?
Opportunity cost.
What's the actual cost?
Yeah.
Are you willing to share some of that and have a share of the benefit rather than 100% of the benefit, you only have 60% of the benefit? Is it still a decent enough money to move forward?
Mm.
So just bringing this all into a bit of a landing here, Simon. So thinking in terms of, like, if I was to walk into a room of, say, 100 different people, and I had a conversation with one person about something that I wanted to do, and I got their opinion, and it's either going to be yes or no as to whether they thought it was a good idea. If I made my decision as to whether I pursue something based on that one conversation, I might not be making the very best decision, right?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's kind of an obvious thing. Obviously, talking to a few people, I'd start to round out what that consensus view might be.
Sure.
And specifically, I guess what I'm getting at is when we talk to mainstream banks, we're going to get a yes or a no.
Yes.
Based on their rule book.
Yes.
Those with the gold make the rules.
Mm-hmm.
What would it look like if we talked to maybe a few more people in the room nowadays? Because the whole shift, everything is moving, right? In terms of what is prime and what is subprime and whether it should even be called those terms.
Yes.
Yeah. If I talk to more people in that room, what kind of response would I hear nowadays in terms of whether or not something is possible? Like, I want to buy a commercial property. My bank said no because the earthquake rating was just a little bit substandard or some other aspect of it. How many more people in that room are going to say yes to me?
A lot more than you would perhaps think. With the non-bank market growing significantly,
yeah,
with new players, new entrants, every one of them has a different playbook.
Right.
So there is no cookie cutter sort of way of saying, right, commercial property,
yeah,
that's what it's going to look like.
Yes.
That's what it has to, that's the bank, right?
Yeah.
Whereas once you start going to alternative non-bank lenders, it's a matter of, okay, well, we see the one problem that you've got. Let's see what are the pros that outweigh the cons.
Right.
What is the overall picture from a macro and a micro viewpoint?
Yes.
Is it viable?
Yeah.
Are we going to lose money?
Mm.
Are we going to be stuck with this? Mm. We go through all the same questions. We take all the same risk analysis, but we're a bit more pragmatic about it.
Mm.
It's not a matter of, we won't give this money to you for this reason. It's how can we find a solution where both parties are happy, risks are mitigated, an appropriate rate is paid for that risk.
Mm.
There is a clear and defined way of repayment in 1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if it all goes wrong, what does that landscape look like?
It's pragmatic, like you say.
Pragmatic. Right. That's the way I explain
non-bank. Let's look at your rule book and just making a yes or no answer more holistic.
Very much holistic.
Which is kind of what people would expect, right? People kind of expect their bank to be quite holistic and they think about it in an overall story.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily how they work today.
Not how they work today.
Mm.
Not at all. That's why I sort of enjoy the industry we're in, because that pragmatic, holistic approach is more challenging, but it's also more exciting.
It's not the case that you'll do, you as a non-bank lender, you won't do everything.
No.
Definitely not.
No.
But there might be somebody else in that room who would do that scenario, but won't do the things that you, it's just not their model, right?
That's
everybody
right.
Everybody is, and so I deal with, I guess I would call them plain vanilla types of clients that are looking to do things where they're very, you know, I guess straight in the sense of fitting the box of mainstream banks. And occasionally I'll need to say to somebody, hey, I'm really sorry, I totally understand the logic. I'm kind of the meat in the sandwich. I totally get the logic. If it was my money, I'd absolutely do it, knowing what I know of you. But you're going to have to actually speak to somebody who's a non-bank specialist.
Yes.
And whether that's you or whether it's advisors who work in that space who deal with multiple providers, you know, there's so much more activity and so many more options out there that exist now than there used to be.
There is a lot of options in the non-bank market. And a good advisor that has got knowledge in that market will have a reasonable understanding of what each funder likes and doesn't like.
Sure.
To your point, I still say no a lot.
Yeah.
But
yeah. It's a lot less than me. I say no way more.
But I also say yes when the bank has said no.
Sure. That and must be quite cool. Yeah.
That it's rewarding to see outcomes achieved where. And I think you said it rightly. If it was my money, I'd give it to them. That's sort of a way of describing how we look at it as well.
Because it is closer to being your money.
It is a bit closer.
Yeah.
Depending on how the fund is comprised of.
Yeah.
So I think, again, you sort of rightly said that just because the bank has said no, it doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It may just mean that you need to understand the risks that were highlighted by the bank, do some further research, and talk to those advisors or professionals that can help you guide you through the process and seek alternatives if that's viable.
Yeah, being solutions-focused
rather than
problem-focused. Yeah. Even just today, I had a response from one of my clients that we weren't able to get finance for them for what I thought was very mainstream, very simple, but the bank just totally disagreed with me. They disagreed with the client's rationale. They disagreed with my rationale. I'm absolutely, if I had the money, I'd give it to them.
Yeah.
But again, I understand emotionally, it's almost like, When you get a no, if you feel like you deserve some sort of rational explanation, and you feel like you deserve the right to even argue with the person who made that decision, but again, that whole phrase that you mentioned earlier on, those with the gold make the rules.
Yes.
That unfortunately, they don't have any obligation to explain why. They can just exercise their discretion, and it's their money. And unfortunately, it should be every focus should be on finding a solution, not just understanding the problem, because that doesn't actually solve a problem.
I mean, that's right. And being an ex-banker myself for many years, it's quite often not a person decision. Right. It's a computer decision.
Computer says no.
Yeah. Computer says no.
Yeah.
And it is very hard to overturn a computer decision because they check all those specific boxes. Mm. If you've got a square peg in a round hole, computer says no.
Yeah.
Rightly, what you rightly say, some people want a real proper explanation, but you may just not get that.
No, again, it's not fair. It's increasingly unfair, but it's not actually about being fair anyway. Mm. That's the thing we have to stop thinking about is that your loyalty doesn't matter.
Nope.
Who you are, how much money you make, your track record, that actually doesn't matter.
In my opinion, no.
Yeah.
From a bank perspective.
Correct.
You can't input 30 years at the bank as a mitigant.
Yeah.
You can't put into the computer, been in business 25 years. You can't put that in.
Can't put it in. I've never defaulted on a mortgage payment.
No.
Yeah. I've got savings in the bank, or my dad is blah, blah, blah.
That's right. We could talk about it for days.
I know.
But all these sort of aspects go into the system, the algorithm.
Correct.
It spits out an answer and they can pick what they want.
Yeah, that's right.
Because again, tightening of credit policy, taking on the grate and just leaving the crumbs.
If it's not plain vanilla, it's going to be a rocky road.
Oh, yeah. And that's where I play.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not really rocky road.
I've never liked vanilla anyway.
No, that's right. It's more like a hokey pokey. It's the occasional little lump that kind of breaks your filling. Yeah. Cool. Well, that was really good. And, we could talk forever on this. But I guess the main thing is that, to sum this up, commercial property investment, it's awesome. We've covered the reasons why it's awesome. But it's a very different game to play. The lending rules are very different, and you need to be very open to talking to non-banks.
Yes.
Just because it's a non-bank doesn't mean it's not a good idea.
That's right.
It just means that you have to talk to different people in the room who might say yes, and you'll get a share of something rather than all of it.
I think that's a great summary.
Thank you. Mic drop. We're done here.
We're done.
Really appreciate your time coming in the studio today again, Simon.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Good stuff. And if people want to reach out to you, maybe they are a square peg in a round hole, you know, or maybe they don't quite fit exactly what the bank is, but they feel like they're very close. How could they reach out to you? What's the best way to connect with you?
There's a couple of methods. You could find me on LinkedIn. I provide a bit of context on the market in there. That's Simon Paris.
Yeah, you're really good on LinkedIn, yeah.
Or you can just send me an email to sp@mbg.co.nz.
Awesome. sp@mbg.co.nz. Fantastic. Thanks again, Simon. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Darcy. Cheers.
Okay, thank you again very much, Simon Paris. And if you have any questions about this, do feel free to contact him, reach out to him on LinkedIn. There are many, many non-bank lenders that operate in New Zealand, and there are some mortgage advisors who specialize in the non-bank sector. If you would like to be introduced to one of those advisors who can talk to multiple options at once, get in contact with me and I can make some introductions potentially, depending on where you are, or just get online and actually start making some conversations. Just because somebody in the room says no to you, it doesn't mean that that's going to be the answer. There often are people, investors, businesses who are keen to partner with you to make things happen, especially if you think it makes sense. So hope you've enjoyed that. A bit of a different one, but again, it's in the context of building wealth, so we've got to cover it. Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your day. Catch you next time. I hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, then I'd encourage you to visit the show notes on your podcast player. And while you're there, sign up to our newsletter. If you're keen to see how good looking we are in real life, we're also on YouTube. Just search for The Everyday Investor. I hope that what you heard today will somehow encourage you to build real and lasting wealth in your world. But do remember to seek your own advice before acting on any of the material covered today. Catch you next time.